Okay, so let's at least get into the beginning of this again. So, as we know, right, the halacha that we're going to have to explain here is, and this is not in disagreement, is that we don't blow the shofar outside the mikdash, whatever the mikdash is defined as for these purposes, on Rosh Hashanah that falls on Shabbat. But why that's true is very different. And what's very nice about this sugya is that you will see a very clear machloket Bavli Yerushalmi, and therefore we will, right? We will very much be able to analyze two different positions within Chazal based on the two different formulations in the two different Talmuds. And it's going to hang basically on the interpretation of this main pasuk here in Vayikra Chav Gimel, which describes Rosh Hashanah as, right, Daber al Bnei Yisrael Emor, Bachodesh Hashvi'i, Bechad Lachodesh, Yelochem, Shabbaton, Zichron Shua, Mikra Kodesh. Okay? So let's try carefully reading the Gemara. We'll see what we get through. So who wants to take up the Gemara? Who wants to read the Gemara? Again, if you have your Gemaras, you can read it inside. I know most of you have Rosh Hashanah. It's just the beginning of the Perek there on Chav Tet Amud Beis. So who wants to be brave enough to read this Gemara? Oh, come on. Someone volunteer.
Yeah, I could do it.
Okay, you can fight it out. When you claim it.
Oh, you can go. Okay, so starting at the Gemara?
Starting at the Mishnah.
Oh, okay, starting in the Mishnah. Okay, so, Yom Tov Shal Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah, Shechal Yom Tov Shabbos, that falls out on Shabbos. The Mikdash, Hayu Ta'in.
Tokin.
In the Mikdash, they would go blow it. Aval Lo B'Dinah. They wouldn't blow it in the rest of the country.
Right, Medina just means right outside the Beit HaMikdash. We'll have to see the exact parameters of that, but yeah.
Mish Echarev is Hamikdash Takin. It was part of the previous line.
No, you're right. No, this is a new line. Mishacharev Beit HaMikdash, when the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed, Hitkin Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zakkai.
Oh, okay, so Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zakkai is Paskin that Shayu took. Based in. So he would go. He posked that he would go blow the shofar on Shabbos on every place that had a based in, specifically of 23.
We'll see what that is, right? Meaning, if you just read the Mishnah, right? Look, you know, again, like I said, one of the important things methodologically here is each line in the Mishnah is to open up all the possibilities. So even so far, what we've read here. Right, Mikdash, you've got to ask whether Mikdash means the Beit HaMikdash. Does it mean Yerushalayim, right? How expansive is it? How expansive is the Medina? And here, right, it says whether there's the Beit Din. But what does the Beit Din mean? It obviously doesn't mean the Beit Din of 71, because that didn't exist at that point. But it could be a Beit Din of 23. It could be a Beit Din of 3, right? You have to ask, what about a Beit Din with smicha, without smicha? What about nowadays, right? Meaning, if there's a Beit Din in a city nowadays, do you blow on Shabbat? And you'll tell me no. Maybe that's crazy, right? That's not a real Beit Din, except you would discover that this was a machloket, you know, 70 years ago. And there were people who tried to blow the shofar on Shabbat in certain places in Israel. And this was an attempt by Rav Schlesinger. So each of these lines is subject to many, many, many machlokot. But okay, right?
All right. Yeah. Okay. So Amar Rav Eliezer. So Lot Atakin. Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zakkai. So he's saying that Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zakkai didn't rule. They didn't make this ruling. Like Ella Yavne.
Yavne Bilvad, right? Only in Yavne. What's Yavne?
Only to Yavne.
Right, yeah. Why Yavne? What's Yavne?
That was where... was he the one that said Tainli Yavne?
Right. Right, he was, exactly. Yes. Now, well, what's important about Yavne? I mean, what's he saying?
That's where the new Sanhedrin...
Exactly, right? Meaning, the machloket in the Mishnah here is it wherever there's any Beit Din or only where there's a centralized authority, right? The centralized authority is in Yavne, Okay.
So, okay, so Amrullah, so they said to him, Echad Yabnab Echad Kol Makom Mashish Bo Basedin. So he says, like, yes, I was in Yavne, but it was also in every place that there was a Beis Din. But, and furthermore, Zot Haita Yushalayim, this would also apply to Yushalayim.
Yitera al Yavne. He said, plus, Yushalayim had an extra benefit over Yavne, which is...
Yeah. Oh, Shekul Yerushihi Roa Shomet
Ukrova
Yechula every place that was sort of near Yerushalayim, they could go here.
Correct, right? These are different standards. These are different halachic standards by which we basically define a place as a suburb of Yerushalayim, right? If you can see Yerushalayim and hear Yerushalayim, and you're close enough and you can come there on Shabbat, right? So, right, it's ancillary to Yerushalayim, something like that. So there...
I'm just curious. Like, what does it mean that you could hear Yerushalayim?
Good. So each of these terms would have to be defined, right? And you have it not just here, right? You have this by Megillah also, right?
Yeah.
Where you have expansions of. Like you said, every line in the Mishnah you have to analyze. Why is seeing a standard? Why is hearing a standard? What does it even mean? Right? Etc. Right? You're right. I mean, each of these, maybe we'll take up, maybe we won't. I don't know. We'll see how much time we have.
Yavne lo hayu atoakin.
Ella bevet din bilvad. Right.
For Yavne, this very generous sort of expansion for all the neighboring cities did not apply.
Good. So now
ella bevet din bilvad. Only in the place where there was a beis din.
Very good. Okay. So now let's take up the main thing I want to focus on. The first question I want to deal with is why. Can't you blow the shofar outside the Beit HaMikdash on Shabbat? Yeah, Andrew.
Why does Yerushalayim have this special status even after the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash?
Ah, very good. So, there are different possibilities there, right? What do you think? Why do you think Yerushalayim has a... Right, what type of reasons might you look for why Yerushalayim is unique even after the Beit HaMikdash?
Well, there's the historical aspect that is where the Beit HaMikdash was.
Right. Good. Now, you can take that historically. You could take it halachically, meaning you could also say, no, that also means there's Kedusha, which remains. Right? Meaning, and that is, as, you know, in fact, a very a extensive sugya in the Gemara, which is, Kedusha Rishona Kitcha L'Sha'ata V'Kitcha L'Atid Lavo Lo Kitcha L'Atid Lavo, and there's a distinction between Eretz Yisrael and the Mikdash, and the question of the relation between Mikdash and Yerushalayim is part of this whole equation. Yeah, Ezra.
Wasn't there a problem, or like wasn't it a concern when they were building this like second Beit HaMikdash that like they couldn't like stand like inside the places building the walls because of like restrictions? So like didn't they have to like build a lot of stuff from the outside?
Well, you're allowed to go in if you need to fix it, right, and build it. So I assume they did build it from the inside.
Okay.
Right. I mean, even people who need to fix even the Kodesh HaKadoshim can go in. They just go in a box.
Oh, really?
Right? Okay. Right? The Gemara describes they go in a box. It is true the second Beit HaMikdash, though, lacks certain things of the first Beit HaMikdash, both in terms of miracles, but also, right, if you know anything about, if you've learned Ezra, which, as we've established, that most of you have not learned Ezra, but you'll see that when the second Beit HaMikdash was building, the people who had never seen the first Beit HaMikdash were rejoicing. The people who had seen it were crying, right? Because the second Beit HaMikdash has a certain middle status in terms of Kedushat Yerushalayim. Yeah. Whoever's hand is up, either Yonatan or Andrew.
Yeah.
From Zoom, I can't really tell. I see a hand between the two of you, so.
How does Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai ascribe the same status of the Mikdash to then courts?
Blowing good. Right? So first you got to figure out whether he thinks that this is biblical or rabbinic. Right? Because if he thinks it's biblical, then you've got to figure out what is the uniqueness of Yerushalayim such that it is easily transferable to wherever there's a court. If it's rabbinic, meaning biblically you're allowed to blow the shofar anywhere, and rabbinically we forbid it, but we don't where there's a court, so then it could be that they're not equivalent. Right? It could be that Yerushalayim, you're allowed to blow it for one reason, and Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai wanted to grant a certain significance to Yavne, on a Dirabanan level, so he came up with a special takana, right? You got to figure out, right, in order to fully parse this conceptually, and this is what we'll see in the Bavli and the Yerushalmi, you've got to figure out, why were you allowed to blow in Yerushalayim and not outside Yerushalayim? And once you know why that's true, then you can figure out how that carried over either to Yavne or other Beit Din. But until you know the nature of the original halacha, then you can't figure out the expansion of Yochanan ben Zakkai. But that's the right question to ask, right? We need to figure that out, and we need to figure out. And again, there are two logical directions you could take. You could either say that there's a fundamental reason why Yerushalayim is allowed to have the shofar blown, and that fundamentally applies to Yavne. Or you can say, no, they're only practically similar, but the reason you blow in Yerushalayim is actually distinct from the reason you blow in Yavne. And that depends, again, on what the original limitation is based on. And we'll see this, right? These are the questions you have to be asking. Right, so we see that even in the Mishnah, there are so many unclarities. Right, there are so many questions that if you're reading the Mishnah, and as we'll see, the major question that the Bavli is going to deal with, and the Bavli and Yerushalmi are going to diverge on, is that there are two very different ways of taking this. Right, one is to say that fundamentally you're not allowed to blow the shofar on Shabbat, and there's a heter in Yerushalayim. The other way to take it is, fundamentally, you are allowed to blow the shofar on Shabbat, and we forbid it, bigvulin. Right? From the Mishnah, you have very little evidence as to which of those it is. Right? Very little evidence. We just know that they did blow in Yerushalayim, and they did not blow, or they blew b'mikdash, and they didn't blow the shofar b'medina. We don't know, right, what the starting point is, right? Whether the given is you do and you have to limit it, or the given is you don't and you need to find a justification. And which of those models is true is going to very much affect the way you understand the expansion to Yavne or any Beit Din. Okay, let's at least start on the Gemara, okay? Because the Bavli, right, weighs two completely different directions as to which of these is true. Okay? So let's start the Gemara. Yeah. Rami, you want to continue or you want to hand it over to somebody else?
Well, my Aramaic skills are not as great as my Hebrew skills, but I guess I'll still give it a try.
Okay, if you need it, you have the translation underneath. If you know, I encourage you to struggle with the Gemara first, but if you need it, it is there.
Gotcha.
All I'm also here, but you know, whatever. There's a translation there as well.
Starting off with
Minani Mili.
So from where do we know this? So Amar Rav Levi Bar Lachma Amar Rabbi Amar Bar Chanina Ketuv Echad Omer. So he says it's written in this one place in Vayikra Yevkema, which I think you just linked which is the source right above us.
Yep.
So okay. So where it says Shabbaton Zikron Trua. So it should be this Shabbaton. Not one with that you go on with a grade, but just a spiritual one. Where you have this zikron, this memory of the true blast. Otev echad omer, and it's written in another place. Yom trua yelachem. So it should be a day of blasting for you, a shofar blast for you. The way the Gemara is phrasing it, it seems like this contradiction, because in one place it just says like it should be a day where you remember shofar blast, so, and another place it's where you, it should be a shofar blast, presumably you're doing the one, you're blowing the shofar.
Very good.
So they say it's not a kashuk guy, kan biyom tov shechal yod shabbos. So the first one is referring to a time when Rosh Hashanah falls out on a Shabbos. And so therefore you can't blow the shofar. And the second source is referring to a time when it falls out on a regular day.
Very good. Right. So let's just stop there for a minute. Right. So the Gemara's first possibility, and again, is that right. Let's just trace out its let's spell out its argument. Right. The Gemara's first argument is that. Is the limitation of blowing the shofar outside the Beit HaMikdash on Shabbat fundamental, meaning biblical, or is it extraneous and rabbinic? What do you think?
it's rabbinical.
No, at this stage in the Gemara. It's biblical.
This seems...
Right? It's a biblical, right? The Gemara is suggesting there are two psukim, one which says blow the shofar, one which says... Which says it's, right, a memory of the shofar blowing. And the Gemara says one describes Shabbat Rosh Hashanah, one describes a regular Rosh Hashanah Nachal. Right? According to that suggestion, it is... Right, there's a fundamental difference between, on a biblical level, between the type of Rosh Hashanah you're supposed to have when it's during the week and the one that you're supposed to have on Shabbat. Right? There are fundamentally different days. One is celebrated with shofar blowing and one is not. Right? There's a different status of Rosh Hashanah during the week and on Shabbat. And maybe we'll stop here, but let's already explain the contours. Obviously, the question that the Gemara is going to jump on is, if that's the case, right? If, in fact, Shabbat, when Rosh Hashanah falls on Shabbat, it's excluded from the mitzvah of Tkiat Shofar, what's the biggest problem with that type of claim?
The Mikdash.
Yeah, then why would you blow the shofar in the Mikdash? Right? Meaning if Rosh Hashanah Shechaliot B'Shabbat is defined as a day that doesn't need shofar blowing, then why should it change if you're in the Mikdash? If it's a fundamental, definitional thing to the day of Rosh Hashanah itself, there should be no exception just because you're in the Mikdash. If you wanted to justify why you would blow the shofar in the Beit HaMikdash, then what would you have to do if you wanted to maintain this drasha? You'd have to say that there's a unique mitzvah that doesn't come from Rosh Hashanah. It's like an external mitzvah. It's a different status that the mikdash has, right? That even though it's a Yom Zichron Truah, it has a mitzvah of blowing shofar, and that's very, very novel. As we'll see, it's that question that fundamentally drives the Bavli to reject this fundamental perspective. But the Yerushalmi is going to accept this fundamental perspective. Okay, what I want you to do tomorrow is make sure you carefully read the Bavli and the Yerushalmi, but I give you one word of advice. I want you to, there's going to be a temptation, and it might be right, it might be wrong, to read the Yerushalmi as if it agreed with the Havamin and the Bavli. Right? Meaning that the structure of the argument in the Yerushalmi is essentially raised by the Bavli before it rejects it. But be careful, because just because the Bavli had a particular way of interpreting the position that's similar to that in the Yerushalmi doesn't mean that's the only way to read the Yerushalmi. Right? Meaning, we're going to see that according to the Bavli, the question which will determine whether or not you blow shofar or can blow shofar on Shabbat is about the is the question of whether shofar blowing on Shabbat is a malacha, right? Note that the Yerushalmi never says that. So it's not clear that the Yerushalmi is simply the Bavli's Havamina. It might be that the Bavli's Havamina is one thing, and the Yerushalmi adopts the same position as that Havamina, but for completely different reasons, right? And you need to be very careful when you read the Yerushalmi to figure out whether that's true, okay? So I want you to read that tomorrow and think about that very carefully and try to figure out what the Bavli is saying, what the Yerushalmi is saying, and whether the Yerushalmi is merely the Havamina of the Bavli or whether the Yerushalmi is a third position altogether. And again, try to really, really carefully outline the conceptual possibilities that emerge. We'll pick up with that tomorrow, okay?